St. Augustine. For Eve, it was an apple. For young Augustine, it was a pear. A whole basket of them, in fact. When he was a boy growing up in a small North African village, one day Augustine noticed luscious ripe pears hanging in the orchard of a neighbor's house. With a group of friends, he snuck into the yard and saw baskets of the freshly picked fruit laying beneath the trees. Augustine grabbed a basket and ran. When he stopped, he took a bite or two of the pears and then, bored with them, threw the rest away. To most people, the stealing of a basket of pears counts as hardly more than a boyish prank, and most children, having committed the act, would feel guilty and afraid for a few days and then forget about it. But not Augustine. The theft of his neighbor's pears haunted him his entire life, becoming a symbol of his sinfulness and weakness, and an ever-present reminder of what he must overcome. Even after he became a priest, a bishop, a doctor of the church, one of the foremost philosophers of Christianity, and the founder of Christian theology, Augustine still remembered the pears. The little village where this unforgettable crime occurred was called Tagaste. It was in the country we now call Algeria, but in Augustine's days it was a province called Numidia, part of the great Roman Empire. Augustine was a black man, even though many paintings later portrayed him looking far more European than African. Augustine was born 3.5 centuries after the death of Christ, on November 13th in the year 354. At this time, the vast Roman Empire still stretched across much of Europe and some of northern Africa. It was one of the largest and one of the most dynamic civilizations the world has ever known. The Romans had built roads, palaces, marketplaces, arenas, and civic buildings throughout their territories. But by the time Augustine was born, the empire was beginning to unravel. Romans, especially the wealthy ones, had become obsessed with pleasure-seeking and power. They kept thousands of slaves, were indifferent to the poor, entertained themselves with savage sports, and ruthlessly fought among themselves for political power. From outside, other countries watched and waited for an opportunity to invade and procure some of the empire's lands and wealth for themselves. The village of Tagaste was far removed from the turbulence of Rome. It was a quiet agricultural town with a marketplace and a school and lots of fields and trees in which a boy could play. Aurelius Augustine did play. In fact, that's about all he did. And his play generally got him into trouble. He skipped school, used every lie and trick he could think of to get out of doing his lessons, pulled pranks and practical jokes on both children and adults, and he led a gang of friends on escapades that usually got them into trouble with the authorities. The pears were not the only theft in Augustine's childhood. He began to steal regularly when he was about 15 and later said he did it not to enjoy what I stole, but because I joyed in the theft and the sin itself. Many times Augustine managed to escape scoldings and punishment because, in spite of his delinquency, he had a clever mind and a quick tongue. According to Augustine, he was difficult even as a baby. He would shriek and throw tantrums when people didn't give him what he wanted. These scenes must have been common since what he wanted was often impossible. He especially remembers wanting morning sunbeams and the flames from the fireplace. Augustine's behavior was a particular source of anguish to his mother, Monica, who was a devout Christian and prayed daily that her son would mend his ways. She tried to persuade him to accept the Christian faith, but Augustine told her the religion held no interest for him and refused to listen to her beliefs. Later, his mother was canonized by the church and became Saint Monica, not because of what she had to put up with in raising Augustine, but because of the spiritual support she gave him throughout his life, even when he wasn't a Christian. Even when he became an agnostic, and even when he joined a group of heretics. Augustine's father, Patricius, had less at stake in his child since he was a non-Christian, or as they called a non-Christian then, a pagan. Monica prayed for him, too, and much later in life he finally joined the church. Patricius was a Roman official, a self-centered man with a bad temper, who spent most of his time plotting ways to get elected to higher offices. His income was healthy enough so that the family, which included 2 other children besides Augustine, was able to live comfortably and without want. Although he was bright, Augustine failed every subject in school. Later he said it was because, if I was slow at learning, I was beaten. Desperate, his parents decided to send him to a new school 20 miles away in the town of Madaura. In this school, Augustine once again became a leader, but this time his leadership took a different course. Suddenly, free from his family and the punishments of his first schoolmasters, he developed a passion for learning. Although he loved sports and games, and although he still loved having a good time, Augustine began to excel in his schoolwork. Soon he was the top student in his class, with special commendations for speaking and writing. When he completed his studies at Madaura at the age of 16, Augustine continued on to the university at Carthage. There he studied Greek, Latin, mathematics, and rhetoric, or public oratory, and became the most admired speaker and writer on campus. His plan was to become a lawyer, but he spent much of his time at the chariot races and the theater instead. He developed close friendships with three other young men named Alypius, Nebridius, and Honoratus, and wrote later, "What attached me to my friends was the pleasure of talking and laughing with them, to read with them the same books, to joke and talk nonsense, sometimes to argue, but without anger, and thus to emphasize the pleasure of generally agreeing. We loved each other with all our hearts." Much of what Augustine and his friends discussed centered around their thirst for truth and the meaning of life. More specifically, they struggled to find a way to integrate their love of pleasure with their search for God. Augustine thought he'd finally found the answer when he discovered religion. Not the religion his mother so fervently prayed he'd discover, but one called Manichaeism. Manichaeism was a sort of blend of Christianity and paganism that held there were two gods, one good, one evil. The gods had equal power and battled each other continually for victory. Augustine had chosen a religion that symbolized his own internal battles, battles that would soon erupt into all-out war. Carthage was not the little village Tagaste had been. It was a city, and like all cities, it offered many opportunities for indulgence as well as for learning. Augustine took advantage of all of them he could. Later he wrote, "In my youth I burned to get my fill of hellish things. I dared to run wild in different darksome ways of love." In Carthage, Augustine felt the first stirrings of the strong sensuality and passions which would plague him for many years. Meanwhile, he converted two of his friends, Alypius and Honoratus, to Manichaeism, and remained a follower himself for 9 years. When he did finally leave, he said the religion had left him deceived and deceiving. Throughout these years, Monica pleaded with Augustine to change his ways and to accept the Christian teachings that there was only one God. Although he respected her, he continued on his own path. That path led him into, among other things, a long but illicit relationship with a woman of low birth who bore him a son when he was only 18. Although they never married, Augustine remained loyal to the woman for many years and had a close relationship with the boy, whom he named Adiotatus. Because the Manichaeans adhered to celibacy, Augustine was allowed to join only one of their lower orders, where marriage was allowed as a concession to human weakness. Even with a new family, Augustine managed to continue his studies, although by now he'd given up his plans to become a lawyer and had decided instead on teaching. His first post was back in his hometown of Tagaste. During the next several years in Tagaste, Augustine was overcome with restlessness. When he eventually gave up Manichaeism, mostly because its leaders weren't intellectual enough to understand or answer his questions, it left him feeling empty and abandoned. He searched for other doctrines or teachings he could believe in and found none, including Christianity, which still left him indifferent. Finally, he decided to make a clean break and move to Rome, taking his mistress and his son with him. Life in Rome was brief and difficult. There was a bias against foreigners, and Augustine found it difficult to make a living. When he tried to start a school, the students took advantage of him by not paying their fees. Soon he was poor, lonely, and often ill. When he was offered a teaching position in Milan, in northern Italy, he gladly accepted. In Milan, Augustine taught rhetoric and gradually developed a reputation as not just an excellent teacher, but one of the city's greatest speakers. He continued his search for the truth, this time turning to the writings of Plato and other works he called Platonic. These consisted of a group of writings now called Neoplatonic, which held a view of an ideal realm that was poorly shadowed in the material realm, just as Plato had described it. Neoplatonists also believed that Plato's views offered a chance to reconcile science and intellect with religion. This gave Augustine hope. The faith of the Catholic Church seemed to him far too unphilosophical for any man of culture. Augustine was so impressed with his feelings that he considered becoming a philosopher himself, but he found his desire for public success was still too strong and conflicted with the idea of a life of contemplation. Still, the more Augustine read of these Platonic works, the more he began to reject his materialism, in theory but not in practice. As his fame grew, so did his finances, and Augustine found himself leading a very material life. By this time, his father had died, and Monica had come to Milan to live with him. She insisted that Augustine give up his mistress and make a proper marriage, something he finally agreed to. When his mistress returned to Africa, she left their son Adeodatus in Milan for Augustine to raise. Shortly after, he proposed marriage to another woman who attracted him. Saddened by the loss of his mistress and distressed when told his new marriage could not occur for 2 years, Augustine wrote, "My heart was broken and wounded and shed blood. I was unable to bear the delay of 2 years. In fact, it was not really marriage that I wanted. I was simply a slave to lust. So I took another woman, and thus my soul's disease was nourished and kept alive as vigorously as ever." It was at this point, feeling chained by his passions and his desire for money and honors, and feeling he'd failed in his search for the truth, that Augustine's life began to change. The changes started when Augustine first met Ambrose, the Bishop of Milan, a magnetic personality, a brilliant intellect, and dynamic preacher, who would one day be known as St. Ambrose. Augustine began to attend church just to hear Ambrose speak, but soon he found himself wanting to know about the preacher's beliefs. Ambrose agreed to meet with him, but only for a short time. His work kept him busy, and he felt a scholar like Augustine could read the scriptures and distill their meaning without help from others. But first he advised him, "Don't read the scriptures for their beautiful writing. Read them for their beautiful ideas." Augustine began studying the Bible, and although he came to accept what it said, he still felt unready to convert to Christianity. He felt he could never alter his desires nor change his life to the extent that Jesus expected of him. These doubts and inner conflicts continued until one afternoon in the summer of the year 386, when a visitor from Africa changed Augustine's life forever. The visitor was a man named Pontician, brought to Augustine's house by his friend Alypius. Pontician was sharing with him a story about two men who had converted to Christianity after reading the story of St. Antony's life. He picked up a copy of St. Paul's epistles, which was lying on Augustine's table, and began to read the story. As he listened, Augustine began to feel strange. The division he felt within himself between his worldly desires and his spiritual aspirations suddenly seemed unbearable. The pain of it was so intense that Augustine began to weep. He walked into his garden, where he could be alone, and stopped under the shade of a fig tree. Then he threw himself to the ground and sobbed uncontrollably. Between his sobs he cried out, "How long, O Lord, wilt thou be angry forever? Remember not my past iniquities." At once, over the noise of his own sobs, Augustine heard the voice of a child singing from a nearby house. It seemed to be chanting, "Take up and read, take up and read." Later he wrote, "At this I looked up, thinking hard whether there was any kind of game in which children used to chant words like these, but I could not remember ever hearing them before. I stemmed my flood of tears and stood up, telling myself that this could only be a divine command to open my book of Scripture and read the first passage on which my eyes should fall." Convinced that God had spoken to him, Augustine hurried into his house, where Alypius was still reading the epistles. Augustine asked for the book, opened it at random, and his eyes fell upon the following passage: "Not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires." Augustine later described what happened next. "I had now no wish to read more, and no need to do so, for in an instant, as I came to the end of the sentence, It was as though the light of confidence flooded into my heart, and all the darkness of doubt dispelled. On the day before Easter, in the year 387, at the age of 33, Augustine was baptized by St. Ambrose, along with his friend Alypius. For a while he lived with his mother, his son Adeodatus, and some friends in a religious community in the country. But when Adeodatus died, Augustine decided to return to Africa. Monica, who had loved and stood by Augustine through all his tribulations, planned to go with him, but she too died while they were still in Italy. He recorded in writing his last conversation with her, held in the port city of Ostia, where he led her through a discussion on the ascent from this world to the other, so she could share with him a momentary experience of life eternal. Augustine's lover, his son, and his mother had all been taken from him in what seemed an instant. He returned to Tagaste alone. Augustine spent the next 30 years of his life in Africa, writing almost constantly and producing works that would influence Christianity to this very day. In Tagaste, he established a religious community dedicated to the quest for God. For the first 3 years in this community, he spent his time on his writing and reading and praying. The philosopher, he now said, is the lover of God. He probably would have continued in this quiet life for many more years had it not been for a trip he made in the year 391 that set him on a different course and thrust him into the world. That year, when he was 37, Augustine journeyed to Hippo, an important African city 45 miles to the north of Tagaste. He did some speaking while he was there, and his oratory, always powerful, deeply impressed the Christian community. The congregation persuaded him to stay, and at their insistence, he was ordained as a priest. 4 years later, when the bishop of the city died, the congregation again used its persuasion to convince him to accept the position as the new bishop. He did, and with the acceptance, he became the leading figure in the church in northern Africa. As bishop of Hippo, Augustine served as pastor, teacher, preacher, and civil judge. One of his main tasks was to counter groups that the church felt were distorting the original teachings of Christ. Heretical groups, as the church called them. One of those groups was the Manichaeans, to which Augustine himself had once belonged. He would present his arguments against these groups in his writings and his sermons, which he gave every Sunday. At least 400 of those sermons survive. He wrote so quickly and prolifically that it sometimes required 3 secretaries to keep up with him. Without them, the work would never have been completed. Augustine was never robust and suffered many illnesses. He dictated most of his work and had an outstanding ability to extemporize or improvise very orderly thoughts. As his reputation continued to rise, Augustine found he had to spend a good deal of his time responding to appeals from throughout the Christian world for his solution to a variety of theological and practical questions. Some of his responses go far beyond letters and are minor treatises in themselves. These demands and his task as bishop dragged Augustine out of the meditative and philosophical study of the scriptures that he might have pursued if left to himself, and forced him into the center of worldly action and controversy. As Augustine worked in Hippo, in Rome, the great fall of the empire that some had predicted for years finally seemed to be starting. The city was invaded and sacked by barbarians, an event many Christians interpreted as punishment for the city's sins. The barbarians, on the other hand, considered it punishment by their gods, who had been deserted by Rome and therefore no longer protected it. In answer to the issues of punishment, Augustine wrote his great and lengthy work, City of God. In the year 430, it was the city of Hippo's turn to be invaded and sacked by hordes of barbarians. Augustine had an opportunity to escape, but he refused to take it. He stayed in hopes of being able to give his fellow citizens hope and courage during the siege, a hope that was but briefly fulfilled. During only the 3rd month of the siege, Augustine developed a fever and died peacefully at home. The date was August 28, 430, and he was 76 years old. The siege continued almost another year. Augustine today is considered the greatest thinker of the early church. His abundant energy and intellectual drive expressed itself on almost every issue of importance to religion and to the church. He was one of the main architects of the Christianity that survived the barbarian invasions of the 5th century and went on to become the religion of medieval Europe. It was the remarkable mind of St. Augustine that synthesized the tradition of Greek philosophy with the New Testament. Plato brought that philosophy to its culmination. Augustine took what Plato had done and fused it with Christianity. The product that resulted would guide human thought for the next several hundred years. Because of this genius for synthesis, his scholastic skills, and his voluminous writings, St. Augustine is known as the founder of Christian theology, a theology that's recognized by Roman Catholics and Protestants alike. His books are among the most influential in Christian history, and of all of them, the two most important are The City of God and Confessions. Confessions is an autobiography written by Augustine in the year 397 when he was 47 years old and had just become the Bishop of Hippo. In Confessions, he wrote at length about his sensuality and worldly desires, his misspent youth, and the moral and intellectual pitfalls into which he'd fallen before his conversion. He wrote that he was so sensual that when he journeyed to the desert, it was the light, textures, shapes, and colors he loved more than the solitude or chance for meditation. He wrote, too, of his lust for women and his attraction to wealth and fame. Confessions soon became the official guide for those within the Christian church who struggled with temptation. The City of God, written in the year 410 when Augustine was 56 years old, was his response to the sacking of Rome by barbarians. The City of God is not Rome. It is the spiritual home of those who love Christ, and it is, by extension, the Catholic Church. At the time Rome was invaded, many people in the empire feared the attack of the barbarians meant the end of the world was coming. Instead, Augustine wrote that the catastrophe had to be God's will. Men could build and destroy cities, he said, but the City of God they didn't build and cannot destroy. He went on to describe the beauty of this eternal city and to remind people that as long as they submitted to the will of God, they had nothing to fear or lament. The message of the City of God was also that humans are not the all-powerful race they claim to be, and that all their creations ultimately perish. Therefore he, as others who were wise would do, had made himself not a citizen of any city built by man, but of the City of God, represented in the material world by the Church. Augustine gave great authority to the Church and worked diligently at refuting opposing opinions. For that reason, he's been credited with inadvertently contributing to the atmosphere of suppression which dominated the Church for centuries. It was in the spirit of this Church supremacy that the Emperor Justinian later closed the Academy, the university at Athens that Plato had founded, because it taught classical philosophy rather than Christianity. Augustine also recognized the leadership of the Church at Rome, leadership that, although accepted today, was not at all clear in Augustine's time. In his days, bishops of different cities were all vying for power and authority, and there was a particular competition between the Bishop of Rome and the Bishop of Carthage. Augustine agreed with those who believed that Christ had conferred great power in the Church in Rome through the Apostle Peter, who tradition held had founded the Church there and had been its first bishop. The Apostle Paul had also worked in Rome. Augustine therefore acknowledged its supremacy, influencing many others to do the same. The most basic beliefs of St. Augustine can be summarized by three simple points. First, he believed God is present in the soul of every human being, and people should direct their attention not to cares and pleasures of the world, but to that God within. Although he was a brilliant theologian and superb intellect, much of Augustine's work, experiences, and views are early examples of Christian mysticism. It was his belief that the spiritual quest begins within, in one's own heart. He accepted that a pilgrimage or a trip to the desert for solitude was fine and even necessary now and then, but ultimately the spiritual life begins at home. He wrote, "God did not say, 'Go to the east to find wisdom, sail to the west to find justice. There where you seek, you shall find, for to him who is everywhere present, one comes by love and not by sale.'" Augustine's second basic belief was that people couldn't change their sinful ways without the help or grace of God. It was his view that God chose only certain people to receive that grace, a belief that became known as the doctrine of predestination. In his words, men will not do what is right, either because the right is hidden from them, or because they find no delight in it. But what was hidden may become clear, what delighted may become sweet. This belongs to the grace of God. Grace was a favor bestowed by God, but it was no shame not to receive it either. This predestination was one of Augustine's most controversial beliefs, and in his later years it alienated some of his followers, who felt it made all their efforts futile. But Augustine refused to compromise and would retract nothing. The third principle of Augustine's teaching was that no one could receive God's special grace unless they belonged to a church and received sacraments. When some argued that those giving the sacraments were not perfect and could not therefore bestow grace, Augustine responded that the sacrament itself was perfect and was the vehicle for God's direct work. These are the most important works and the primary views of St. Augustine, Bishop of Hippo, and Doctor of the Roman Catholic Church. They were views that had an enormous impact on the Church and on human thought. St. Gregory the Great relied on Augustine's work for his theology. Charlemagne used them for political theory. Both Thomas Aquinas and John Calvin integrated Augustine's doctrine of predestination into their philosophy. Besides Calvin, Martin Luther and other Protestant reformers taught his ideas. And many philosophers, including Immanuel Kant, were influenced by him. Even Albert Einstein, more than 1,000 years later, studied and said he profited immensely from the writings of St. Augustine. There are many ways in which the seeker may find their God. For some people, it is a simple, uncomplicated sense of devotion they feel from childhood. For others, it's an intellectual pursuit in which reason leads to faith. Many people simply stumble upon a church, a doctrine, a book, or a teacher they feel they can accept and embrace. Still others have continuous mystical experiences and visions which inspire them. None of these were the paths of St. Augustine. His path was neither one of pious simplicity, comfortable detachment, nor divine ecstasy. Augustine was one of those who found his truth only through the desperate internal struggles that reshape a mind and a soul. His own course was a battlefield where the lower and higher selves wrestled for supremacy and where he suffered the wounds and deaths of that battle. Unlike the monk cloistered in the abbey or the yogi entranced in a cave, Augustine lived in the world with all its temptations, challenges, and demands. He experienced lust, greed, ambition, pride, and all the other human drives that often seem to deprive our lives of rich meaning and purpose. Few of the recognized saints understood and experienced human passion as Augustine did. For that reason, he remains not just a theological and philosophical influence, but an influence on all who are human and who aspire to be more.
This is the end of the session.